Welcome to Tales from a Bibliophile, a bookish podcast about all things reading and the communities that books create. I'm your host, Carly Galorn Stewart. Each week, I'll have a different guest on to chat all things books. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. That's still such a funny thing to say. Peyton, you might be... Peyton's here. My friend Peyton is here. Peyton Winstead. We went to college together. Hi, Peyton.
Hello.
Peyton is a therapist and has a master's in social work. Is that right? Okay, I said it right. And we're going to chat about some mental health adjacent books today. Celebrate's a weird word, but it's May is Mental Health Awareness Month, so I guess recognize Mental Health Awareness Month. I was going to say, I think you might be the 10th person. You're the 10th episode I've recorded, but spoiler alert, I forgot to post an episode last week. So you may be number 9 that actually gets posted. I'm going to look at it while I'm thinking about it. I've like 3 times this week, I've been like, you need to post the episode that you just recorded. And I did not. Maybe I'll go ahead and post it. It was a good episode. It's about craft books.
Ooh.
I know. So you may or may not hear that episode before this episode, depending on if I post it and how you listen. It was really fun. But I'm so excited to have Peyton here with me. We have known each other for a long time, actually.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's like 10 years, but we can't talk
about
it.
I don't know. I always feel so old now when I talk about when I graduated college. It's super weird. It feels too long. But before we jump into mental health books, have you been reading anything good lately you'd like to chat about?
So I actually just finished The Family Game by Catherine Sedman. It was one of my book of the month books.
Yeah. I saw that on Instagram.
Yeah, it was not my favorite book by any means. It was so slow. Like for a thriller, it was super slow to start off. And then like the twist component of the thriller was just like, oh, okay. But yeah. The book that I am reading that I am excited about is called The Lone Woman by Victor Lavelle. It was another one of my book of the month picks. Yeah, it's pretty new. I think I got it last month for my book of the month. It's about a woman who it like starts out as like a mystery of what's in this trunk that she's traveling with. And she's like traveling to North Dakota to like homestead in like Depression era type things.
Okay.
So it's pretty early on in the book and I mm-hmm. but I'm really excited about it because the what's in the trunk kind of thing is keeping me hooked.
Cool. It's been a minute since I've read a thriller or a mystery. I go through phases. But I remember I've seen the Catherine what's her last name? Catherine what?
Stedman.
Stedman. I was gonna say Coulter and I was like, that's not right. That's a different Catherine. I've seen that book. Kind of that cover bounce around. I recognized it when you posted it on Instagram earlier. It's really weird when thrillers are slow at the beginning. Like that's seems counterintuitive to the whole genre. I remember reading the last thing he told us. It's the Laura Dave book that's been everywhere. And I think is being made into either a TV show or a movie. And I got really excited because I love Laura Dave. But then I realized later that that book was very different than the books I'd read by her. She actually didn't really write thrillers. And then she wrote this one, which was a thriller. And at the end, I was just like, that was okay. Like, that was interesting. But like, the twist was not like, I don't know. Like, I didn't really guess exactly what was going to happen. But I also wasn't like super impressed with what actually happened.
So I have a toxic trait that I will read the last line of a book.
I will read the whole last page. Like if I am not if if I am like not digging it and I'm not sure if I want to keep reading it, I'll read the whole last page. And people are appalled at me when I say that, but yeah, otherwise no, I'm just going to not read it. It's, I mean,
yeah,
it, you know, it is.
That's what I did for this, for that book specifically. Cause it was like, I don't know if I can continue on. And then I have it as like a physical copy, but I also have it on my Kindle. So I like kept seeing where like the percent was like, it was only like 56%, 64%. And I still felt like, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't. Yeah. I can't. So I read the last line and was like, okay, I'm going to finish it, but it's still just.
I did that with, the example I always bring up when people are appalled at me for this is, I can't remember the name of it now, but it was, it was set in December. It was a Christmas setting, which is why I was reading it. Cause it was Christmas and I don't always do this, but people had been talking about this book and I was like, maybe I'll read something festive. And it was billed as a romance. And if you like are a romance reader, if you know anything about like the genre, if you label it as a romance, it has to have a happy ending. Like that is the whole point. And I was like, not super getting into it. I liked the characters, but I think it was really slow is what it was. And so I read the last like page and it was not a happy ending. It was a very unhappy ending. And I was like, this is like, if I had not been expecting a romance novel, like it wouldn't have been that big of a deal. I think it still might've been an interesting story, but I was just like, this is not a romance. And I stopped reading it. I was like, I'm not reading this anymore. You lied to me. I'm done. I was like, I wanted I don't read a lot of unless it's October. In October, I do read like Halloween horror, gothic mystery stuff, which I read all the time anyways. But I plan in October, I plan what I'm going to read and what I'm going to watch. And the plan is to read / watch as much vaguely Halloween vibey stuff as possible. I read at Christmas, I read the Dickens book, Christmas Carol. I almost said A Tale of Two Cities and that's not it. I read a Christmas Carol every year and that's kind of the extent of my Christmas reading. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll try. And now I think I'm going to go back and just read the Christmas Carol and that's all, that's my festive only. Trying to think about what I'm reading. I have like 47 million books that I'm reading, which is always the case. Oh, I'm reading for my staff book club. I am reading a fantasy novel called, let me make sure I get the name of it right. Oh, I didn't update it in Goodreads. So I think it's called The Goblin Emperor. That sounds right. I dip in and out of fantasy. I was not aware of this one. The Goblin Emperor by Katherine Addison. Apparently it's a whole series. No, it's not. I remember this conversation at book club. Goodreads like tags it as number one and then you like pull it up and it's like a bunch of weird, like not related books. I think that's why our coworkers suggested it. I really like fantasy that I can not have to remember a whole new world building thing because I won't remember it as I'm reading it. I get very, my memory is just garbage, really, is what it is.
I just realized that I'm nodding at you a whole lot, recognizing that like no one is going to hear a nod. So yes, I am.
That's okay. You're fine. No, you're good. Yeah, so that's mostly what I'm reading. I have a bunch of other stuff kind of on stashed in my TBR, and I bounce around. But we're supposed to be reading The Hacienda, I think. For my other book club. I haven't read it.
I've heard a lot of things. I haven't read it yet either, but I've heard a lot of things.
I've heard a lot of good things about it. I might have actually been one of the people to suggest it for book club. We like suggest a bunch of titles every 6 months and then Lindsay picks for us. But I loved Mexican Gothic and it keeps getting compared to Mexican Gothic. I love any sort of creepy Gothic Shirley Jackson-esque thing, which Peyton knows very well. Listen, I tell this story all the time. It's one of my favorite stories. When Peyton and I were in college, we convinced one of our professors to like teach the specific class just because we wanted to, like we wanted to do it. And I think I might have initiated it because I really just wanted an excuse to talk about my favorite book of all time, which is We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson, and is not typically the Shirley Jackson people talk about. And so we I was going to say sweet talked. I don't think it was sweet talking. I think we sort of manhandled her you kind of bullied her into teaching this class. She had a lot of fun though. So
the sad part is I didn't get to take it because I got sick and left. No,
oh, that's right.
It was the next semester.
Forgot about that. Oh man.
But I absolutely remember bullying her into having that class. Because after American Authors, what could you do after that? Because that was such a good class for us. And then it was like, okay, we need more. Please let us do this class.
Yes. We ended up reading. So we read We Have Always Lived in the Castle and The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson. And then we read a couple short stories. And then we read Frankenstein, The Picture of Dorian Gray, and a bunch of Poe, I think. Mm. I think that was
it. I'm so jealous. Oh my God.
It was really fun. And then was American Authors the one where we read Kate Chopin?
Mm-hmm. And
yes, yeah.
Desiree's Baby.
Oh my God! Yes, yeah, that class.
And I was trying to convince everyone that the baby was black, and everybody was like, "Peyton, you're nuts!" And I'm like, "It's the truth. How can you not see it?"
Yeah, we were probably either really fun or really obnoxious to be in English classes with in college. We were very opinionated, and we went to a small school, so the classes were small, and so we got away with a lot more opinions than you might in a bigger college. But yeah, it was so fun. So yeah, I'm excited to read The Hacienda. It'll be interesting to see if I finish either of these book club books this month. I am a regular show up to book club without having read the book, asshole. Like I do it probably every 2 months. I did it last month. I had not finished reading, which I think it was because I thought I had another week for both of my book clubs, actually. I thought I had another week, so I didn't read either of the books. But we were reading The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, and I love Taylor Jenkins Reid, so I don't know how I didn't get into that one fast enough. And then the other one we were reading was Deaf Republic, which is a poetry book that we weren't originally supposed to read for book club, but my library system got a grant, and so they made all the book clubs that were library book clubs read it. Not that it was a bad book, it just was not what we were supposed to be reading. I actually don't remember what we were supposed to read. But anyways, I didn't read either of those. I will go back and read them, but I'm so bad at reading what I'm supposed to read by the time I'm supposed to read it. I love the idea of book clubs, and I like the conversations, but I'm bad at, my brain will be like, oh, you're supposed to read this. We're not going to, you zero interest. It's wild.
Are we ready for a hot take?
Yes, go.
I have not read a single Taylor Jenkins Reid book.
I don't think that's necessarily a hot take. I love her, but I've loved her for years. She only recently got popular in the last two-ish, maybe 3 years. So she has I'm trying to think. I think Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo is the dividing line in my brain. So she has that one. And then she has Daisy Jones, and then she has Malibu Rising, and it's sort of partner book. It's not really a sequel. Carrie Soto, I think is what it's called. I haven't read it. And those books are very different. She has four books that she published previously, and those four are very different than the newer ones. And so I found her older ones just when I was shelving the library one day, and I read After I Do, and I like her older stuff because the thing she does really well is write love stories that are not typical romance novels. After I Do was about a couple that is essentially breaking up, and instead of officially breaking up, they separate for a year and they have no contact, and then at the end of the year they come back and they're like, do we want to try again? Do we want to break up? And I was like, that's an interesting concept. And So I liked her older stuff, but she got real hot real fast. It was Daisy Jones. One of them got picked up as a Reese Witherspoon, and that always like skyrockets them.
I'm pretty sure it was Daisy Jones. I don't know though, because I feel like I have been immersed in all that is Taylor Jenkins Reid even before she like exploded and got popular in things. Mm-hmm. Like so many of my friends have been obsessed with things. So I thought that she had been way more popular than she maybe was then.
I think it's only been in the last couple of years that she really got, like, I think there was probably like a certain group of people who had discovered her, but like if you read maybe like primarily romance novels, you might have known about her. But I think she started getting kind of bigger around the time that Emily Henry started getting big. And I don't know, like I enjoy her books, but they're not like the best thing I've ever read. Like it's kind of like the Colleen Hoover thing, except for I think Taylor Jenkins Reid is a better writer. I think it's a lot of like celebrity book club / TV rights / TikTok hype that's kind of got everyone talking about her. There was a book I read recently, I feel like a lot of people might feel like Taylor Jenkins Reid the way I feel about the Crawdads book. Like I read it and it wasn't a bad book, but it had been hyped up so much that like it did not live up to the hype for me. Like I just, and so I feel like Taylor Jenkins Reid is probably that way for a lot of people. Like I enjoyed Daisy Jones and the Six a lot. But it's not like the best book I've ever read. I don't think it'll be interesting because Britton, if you are a regular listener, you've heard Britton twice now. I think we're doing like a book to screen sort of series. And so we just did Coraline and we're going to do Daisy Jones next because they just made a TV show. So I'm interested to go back and see, because I read it when it very first came out before it got picked up as a Reese Witherspoon. And I remember like enjoying it because I really liked, I'm like obsessed with Fleetwood Mac. And so it gives off a big Fleetwood Mac vibe, which I actually just learned it was inspired by the breakup of the Civil Wars a couple years ago, or like it's been a while now. But I thought it was like, oh, I thought it was, I thought it was like Fleetwood Mac mostly, but apparently I think she pulled a lot from Fleetwood Mac because of the time period it's set in, but it was like initially the Civil Wars. And I was like, interesting. Have you read, I've talked about this book on this podcast since day one, which I think was January when it came out, and I still have not finished this book. But it's called The Villa by Rachel Hawkins. She wrote,
very familiar.
You might enjoy her earlier, one of her first books. I can't remember the name of, I think it's called The Woman Upstairs. It's like a play on Jane Eyre. But this one, The Villa, is inspired. I just like explaining to people what it's inspired by because it's super fun and I enjoy seeing people's reactions. It's inspired by Fleetwood Mac, the summer that Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein, so like the events of like her in the house with the other authors, and the Manson murders. And I was just like, if you can do that, like if that's how you can write a book, I'm doing the wrong gig. Like I want in on this. It's such a wild inspiration. But that, it reminded me of the Taylor Jenkins Reid one because of the Fleetwood Mac, like pull in. She also has like a fictional band that's basically Fleetwood Mac. But yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if I enjoy Daisy Jones this time as much as I did before. The show looks really well produced. And I will give Taylor Jenkins Reid this. She wrote an entire album's worth of lyrics for the band in Daisy Jones. And then they had the actors who play the main characters actually record that album. And you can listen to it as like the TV show soundtrack. And I was like, okay. Also Taylor Jenkins is probably getting so much money out of this. Cause she, I guess is probably credited as like the writer for all those songs too. And as soon as that one got picked up, One True Loves, which is actually one of her older ones, I was surprised that one got picked up and made as fast as it did. I think it's already out, and got made, and then The Malibu Rising one just got picked up, and Carrie Soto, because they're kind of paired. And then Evelyn Hugo got picked up too. So she got Daisy Jones, and then people were like, oh, we'll take all of it, which good for her. But yeah, I don't think you're necessarily like missing out. If you do ever, I enjoy them, but if you ever read them, like, definitely go into it with like, it's just a normal book. It's like not the best book you're ever going to read. But it is interesting to kind of hear, I don't know. I read a lot of romance, but I'm not like primarily a romance reader. Like I've never read Colleen Hoover. I don't really think I ever want to, like, I don't really want to. I am fascinated with the like culture of the Colleen Hoover readers right now. My sister loves her, and like, more power to you. Like, you read whatever you want to read. And like, I love when, like, my sister's always been a reader, but she like had a baby and got busy and like hadn't. So like, Colleen Hoover is kind of one of the ones she got back into it with. But it's so funny when people are checking them out now, at the library. I checked out Verity to like a 70-year-old woman the other day. And I was just like, I don't know if you know what's about to happen. I don't know all the details because I haven't read it. But my sister was like, this book is insane. This book is dark. This book is, she was like, if you have children or like children, like, maybe not for you. So I don't know what's happening. I think I also checked out Evelyn Hugo to like an older woman last month. So it's interesting to see the like community, because it's like mostly our age or younger that are like hyping those books. So it's super funny to see like older people come in with them. But who knows? We can jump into our mental health books. This always happens. I'm always like, when I like was planning this podcast, I was like, this will be a fun little like icebreaker. And then it always ends up being like a 30-minute conversation about books or reading / have read / don't have anything to do with the episode, but it's a book podcast. So you get
books,
and sometimes other things. Do you want to, so one of the reasons I wanted to have Peyton on was because Peyton is a therapist and, works in mental health and sort of has a different, viewpoint, than I have, on books. So just for, clarification, I have dealt with depression since I was in high school, like 15. And I've been diagnosed with persistent depressive disorder, I think is what it was called. I think it's called something else now. But the way my therapist explained it to me in college was that you are sad most of the time. And then when you have a depressive episode, you're really fucking sad. Like, that was just, like, in layman's terms, that's what it is. And so,
really good explanation.
Yeah, it was Sean Williamson, so I don't think he said the F word, but that was basically how he explained it. And so I started taking medication in college. I tried to stop taking medication after I got out of college because I was like, I'm in a routine. I'm not as stressed out. Like, maybe this is, and like, spoiler alert, it's like a chemical imbalance for me. It's like, depression can be very like contextual and like only in, I don't know, pain can
situational.
Tell you. Situational. Yeah. Thank you. I was like, there's a word. Can be very like specific to a situation, or like for me and several other people I know, it can be a chemical thing that like is lifelong. So I, and I don't know, it's interesting because I take, I am on, of the medications I've taken over the last 10 years, the one I'm on right now helps the most. Like, it was wild the difference that it made. Like, I thought my medication was helping and then I switched and it was like, oh, okay. This is what it's like to, this is what normal people feel like most of the time. And I do, it's been a minute since I've been in it cause I, moved and had a bunch of stuff going on, but I do pretty regular therapy and have for years. And I still have episodes, like, I don't know. I had a really bad one earlier this year and then a really bad one last year. And it can be like triggered by situational stuff, but so I, all of about half of my books are depression related, but Peyton has some great diverse, not diverse, but like different viewpoint ones for me. So do you want to share your first one?
Sure. My first one is one that I read fresh out of my master's program. I took a month off between my master's program and my first job, and I got real bored real fast.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh my gosh, that's so smart. And I'm like, yeah, no, I was bored out of my
mind. Smart, but yeah, you do also get, when you're used to like the like super fast paced, like stressful environment of college and master's programs, it gets weird when you don't have them or the structure of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was looking for something that was therapy related because I was feeling a little bit imposter syndrome-y and just like, I am a big girl now and have to do this by myself, and all of those things. And so one of the books that I read during that time is called Group by Christy Tate. And honestly, it was way more for me than it really influenced the way that I practice.
Yeah, it's an interesting book. We talked about this a little bit before the podcast, but it's technically a biography, but it does not read that way.
No,
and it's from the perspective of, it's been a minute since I read it, but it's from the perspective of like a patient, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I, every time I introduce it to anyone that I talk to about it, I say that it's fiction adjacent in the sense that this is absolutely Christy Tate's life and her story. But it for sure reads as fiction. Even the way that she writes, that you feel like a character in the book.
Yeah.
And so I think that it is good for like 20 somethings or even older people that are going through like pretty big transitions in your life. It can speak a lot to the chaos, specifically if you're in your 20 somethings, it can speak a lot to the chaos of trying to date people and try to like launch your career and like wanting to find the one and all of these things, and you get all of the wrong ones and you just get so discouraged. And maybe you also like throw in an eating disorder that you discovered in childhood. And then, you know, there's a pretty big also underlying theme of trauma and trauma work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And honestly, the beauty of community coming together around this like really quirky
psychotherapist. That's a good word for it. Yeah, he is. The therapist is very quirky. That is a word for it. And I will say too, like I read it a couple years ago, like maybe a year or so after it came out. So I was solidly in my late 20s. I knew what career I wanted to be in, and I also had been married to my husband, who is the only like serious long-term relationship I've ever been in. Like I dated the only other like long-term, air quotes, one was 6 months before him. So I don't know what it's like to date. I told one of my coworkers the other day that I haven't dated, like when I was dating, Tinder didn't like exist. It's a whole new culture now. I do not envy anyone. But so like I didn't relate to Christy in like the like obvious ways. Like my life was very different from hers. But I still like, I got a lot out of it. Like I still felt very seen. I think there's like this, you don't have to have like the exact, like mental health issues or like life experience, but there's just this overall, like, I hate when I use this word, and I like now don't know, like it's like my brain has forgotten any other word that will work for it. But it's like in your late 20s, there's this whole like mental vibe that you have. And like, I don't know, that book is a really good, like not setting, but like you feel like it's, you get very immersed in it, and it feels very relevant, I think, to anyone kind of in the 20s, early 30s range. And maybe otherwise, if you actually connect with any of the specific stuff. But I've also been to group therapy, and it was not that intense, but it's pretty spot on. Like it's weird to go into a room and talk to people that you don't know outside of this specific therapy group about your life and then leave and not talk to them again for a week, which is what you do with a therapist. But like, I don't know. I've always, group is a lot different. And well, the only one I've been to that I actually am going to, I think, start going back to is like a chronic illness support group type group therapy thing. But it's odd because when you do regular therapy, it's just this one person and like they don't really like share anything about themselves. Like it's really just you talking to them. But group is like all of these very different like personalities that are kind of thrown together. So I thought it was a really good description or a really good picture of group therapy.
Yeah, I can say like as a therapist, I am terrified of doing groups. And so I thought that this would be a good, like, oh, let me read it. Maybe it will convince me otherwise to
maybe it'll calm me down. Yeah.
I still have not conducted a group. I can confidently say I am 2 years solidly post-grad and have not conducted a single group. Although, as of this recording, my clinical supervisor has been pushing for me to facilitate a group. So we will see what happens there. But one thing that I think to kind of jump back to what you were saying, I think it's the like raw vulnerability of your late 20s that is shown up in that space of the group. And also the groups that Christy is in, it's not her same age group or even gender or anything like that. It's
right.
Very different people in very different stages of life and things. And so like, I think of the part, there's like a part where she is just like sobbing into the rug on the floor, like in the middle of this circle. And I was just like, I feel this on a deep level. Like I understand this level of vulnerability and like wanting that release, maybe. Kind of like screaming into a void or something that I definitely appreciate.
Yeah. And I think with therapy, like the thing that's always been really helpful to me with therapy, like group or individual, is that like you get to go in and you get to say all this stuff and like it doesn't leave. Like you have to trust the other person, but like for the most part, I've never had it happen to where, you know, I got out or anything. But like you're still really vulnerable, but there's like almost a safety net. And so like you get to release a lot of stuff that you don't do in the real world. Like you're not going to talk to like other people in your life about, and they don't have like the people you're either in group with or like your therapist, like they don't have a side. Like they don't know the rest of your life. They're not like, there's nothing in it for them. And so their feedback is all very neutral or like your like positive for you. I love therapy. I am like the biggest proponent of therapy. I say all the time, if I ever hit the lottery, I would pay for every person I know to go to therapy. Many who need it anyways, but also I just think that even if you don't have like a specific thing, like it's a great, I don't know. I just like going and talking to a person for a week and like, or like once a week and getting to say whatever you want is awesome. But yeah, so I'm going to start with like my first book is the oldest one I have. It's not that old, but so I got diagnosed with depression, or like I started having symptoms and started like dealing with it as a teenager around the time, and this is gonna like make me feel so freaking old. What is the, sorry, I'm trying to find the copyright date on this book. 2015 is when this book came out, but around the time that I was starting to deal with therapy, the nonprofit Two Right Love on Her Arms had started. I think it was like maybe a year or two old. And they have just now passed, like this year was their 17th anniversary. And I was like, when I saw that, I was like, excuse me. So I've been dealing with this for like over half my life, but I was able to talk to an adult and say, this is how I feel, and I think something's wrong, and I need help, because I was familiar with To Write Love on Our Arms, and I was seeing what they were doing. If you're unfamiliar with them, it's a nonprofit that helps people that deal with various mental health stuff, but specifically depression, anxiety, and self-harm and suicide. And it started as a very small, like, fundraiser almost to help a friend get through detoxing so that she could go into rehab and get help. She was dealing with depression and suicidal ideation and self-harm. The guy who is the founder of To Write Love wrote her story, and this will also make you feel old, put it on MySpace. Every time. And then they started selling t-shirts that said To Write Love on Our Arms. If you go read the original story, it'll kind of explain the name. So it exploded from there. There were so many people who read her story on MySpace and were like, I identify with this. Like, this is how I feel. And so his name is Jamie Torkowski. The book is called If You Feel Too Much. But it is a collection of essays / it reads very much like a blog, which will turn a lot of people off. But I feel like it, for me, it was it made it that much more relatable. Like, it's very vulnerable. It's very raw. He doesn't use capital letters unless he's writing a name, which kind of triggered me a little bit, because there's a lowercase I, with a page I just flipped to, there's seven sentences that start with I and none of them are capitalized. But otherwise he still uses grammar and quotation marks and periods and stuff. And he does capitalize some letters, but not all of them. But it's really interesting because it talks a lot about, it does talk about the origins of To Write Love and what they do, but it talks a lot about his own struggle with mental illness and what that looks like. And this book invites you. I always love reading the back of books. The essays in this book invite readers to believe that it's okay to admit to the pain and okay to ask for help. I don't know. It feels dramatic. There are two things in my life that I say saved my life, and one of them is To Write Love in Our Arms and Jamie Tarkowski's words, in the sense that it just made me see that I was not the only person who dealt with this. It made me feel very normal almost. And I have especially when I'm in a depressive episode, I've never attempted suicide, but I've really bad what my therapist calls passive suicidal ideation. So I think I don't want to kill myself, but if I didn't wake up tomorrow, that'd be fine. And so I was really scared of that, especially as a teenager. But if you have experience with that, or somebody you love has experience with that, and it's just so outside of what you know, I feel like this book is very easy to get into. It's not academic. It's not, it's very, very relatable. And so it just is really, I love it. It's really good.
Yeah.
The whole thing is covered in underlines and bookmarks, or pages folded down and stuff. But
yeah, I've actually read this book, and this is gonna be a cute, sweet, sentimental moment for us. But I read that book because of you when we met in college, and the most interesting thing for me to introduce or talk to you first about was your tattoo. And of course, yes, you then gave basically similarly that entire spiel, and then said, you need to read this book.
Yeah. I have given the spiel for 10 years now. And depending on when you met me, if it was before 2015, I was go to this website. If it was after, I was read this book. So I have a tattoo that's very large, much to my mother's dismay. It was the first tattoo I got. I got it at 18. It takes up half my forearm, or it takes up pretty much my whole forearm. But it's got stars in the middle that have the initials for To Write Love on Our Arms in it. which inevitably makes me explain stuff because nobody knows what it is. And then it says, remember the stars. So part of the original story is that she is the friend that they started it for. When he wrote her story, one of the things that they talked about a lot was remembering that even when the sky is really cloudy and really stormy, that there are still stars there, and they're still beautiful, and they're still like they don't exist, they don't stop existing, you just can't see them. And I thought that was a really incredible like sentiment about depression, because it really is sort of like none of the good stuff in your life necessarily goes away. You can't see it, and you can't see past the storm that's like happening in your brain. And I got the tattoo as a reminder to myself. It was very much a like, you need to remember this. And it's been a perfect reminder to myself, and then also a really great conversation starter. I forgot about that. Yeah, I did very much just kind of walk around and be like, read this book, read this book, read this book.
To be fair, it was the website first, and then once the book came out, you were like, read.
Yeah. And the website is the easiest way, because you can like literally just go, and I think they have a button on their homepage just like read the story, and you can get kind of the original story, which is just like a blog post basically. And then you can read, if you are interested, Jamie's book, that is essays, several essays. But yeah, so it's a very like easy kind of, it's not academic. It's very like relatable. So.
Yeah. I think I described it once to someone as, if Chicken Soup for the Soul and Tumblr had a love child, that's
yeah, what it would be. Mm-hmm. That is so spot on. That is so spot on. If you liked the idea of Chicken Soup, but it kind of also made you want to throw up at the same time, like this is a good book for you.
100%.
It's less cheesy, but it's got the same like human vulnerability vibe of the Tumblr generation. I think Jamie is like, I think he's definitely older than us, but not by much. Oh, yeah. So
I actually think he's 40.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I think,
yeah, that sounds right. So like he definitely like he didn't use Tumblr the same way we did, but Tumblr was definitely the thing that was in his world. So I can see that being an influence. That's hilarious. It's so funny. Never thought about it that way. What's your next book?
My next book, I think I'm gonna go with is kind of an adolescent teen book. It's called Step Into Your Power, by Jamia Brown. I think it's Brown now. I gotta check. Wilson. Jamia Wilson. And it is a author of color, which I am always down to read. The subtitle for it is 23 Lessons on How to Live Your Best Life. So it really definitely speaks more to the like Gen Zs and whatever this new generation of adolescents and kids are called. I have no idea. But definitely talks about how to advocate for yourself, how to advocate for your mental health, what to do if you're being bullied, why your brain is doing the things that your brain is doing with, you know, the hormones that are surging through your brain, as well as other things. And also it does like a really good job of normalizing emotions like fear and imposter syndrome and different things like that, that I think a lot of like preteen and teenagers, as a therapist to both of those age groups, really are struggling with and learning how to set boundaries, which I think is something that our age group had to learn as adults in a lot of ways.
That's a huge thing. It is shifting. Like I think a lot of kids are learning that younger, or there's like a, it's sort of more acceptable to set boundaries younger. Whereas like I'm literally like my birthday is next week and I'll be 31 and I'm still like learning that. So that's great. Yeah.
And I think too, it also is something that can be broken up into lessons. So if someone mm-hmm. wanted to do it in, like, I wouldn't say necessarily a book club setting, but if a teacher or a school district wanted to do it as like a SEL kind of social emotional learning piece or anything like mm-hmm. that, it's a really good resource. It's also a really good resource for parents of that age group to be like, mm-hmm. I don't know how to navigate this world with you because I have not had to deal with the social media aspect of it and different things.
Yeah. It is so different to be that age now, even than when we were young, but especially like our parents' age. Like if you're, yeah. So it's a whole other like planet almost.
100%. And so I think it's a really good resource for parents as well, like as a talking point or like, hey, let's do this together kind of book.
Yeah, that's great. I'm totally going to look that one up when I get done. This is not officially one of my books, but if you are looking for more younger, like teenage, early college book recs, there's a book anthology called Don't Call Me Crazy. That's a bunch of essays from different people. Some of them are like more well-known authors. Some of them are just people that they got to like contribute to the book, but it's all different mental health issues. And it is all like first person essay, like story memoir type of stuff. That's like specifically built for that age group. Is a great one. We have it on display right now for our mental health awareness display at the library. So I think my next one that I'm going to talk about is this book called Welcome to the Grief Club. And I actually asked Peyton when we sat down, like, and started our conversation. I was like, do you as a therapist consider grief to be like a mental health thing? Because grief is such an odd, like, cultural taboo. Like, we don't talk about it. I think I've mentioned this at least sort of adjacently on the podcast, but one of my best friends of 10 years, more than 10 years, that I've known since college passed away last year. And it was very traumatizing, outside of just your, as like the normal trauma that you experience when a friend dies. Like, he had a chronic illness and I had to sort of watch him deteriorate. Our relationship was very not different. Like, I don't know. I just feel like culturally, like if you don't know the people, like friendship, like losing a friend is like not as seen as, I feel like it's not seen, or in my experience in the last year, it's not seen as big of a deal as it feels. And so I felt like my grief experience was not, did not match up to what other people expected me to go through. And so I felt really alone in, like, I had a couple friends that, were really close with him as well. And like, we'd all sort of known each other since college. And, one of my best friends now, like, I still was one of his best friends. And so like, I have that like ability to talk to them about it, but like, I don't know. It's just, our culture, the way our culture handles grief is really odd. And so this book is called Welcome to the Grief Club. The subtitle is Because You Don't Have to Go Through It Alone. It's by Janie Kuo. And it's this cute, like, little illustrated, like, almost like a manual, but like not, I don't know. I don't want to say lighthearted because it's not lighthearted, but it's illustrated. It's very colorful. It's very accessible. That's the word I want. It's very accessible. And so the author, her partner died when they were in their late 20s. And so it's a younger, that's the other thing too, that was odd for me is that like I'm about to turn 31. He was like 36. Like, we're young. And so a lot of times when you talk about grief, it's either like super sudden or it's like old age. And it was neither of those for me, for my friend. And so it was a weird, it's been a weird experience. And it's significantly affected my mental health. And so I was trying to figure out a way to navigate it. And this book was really, really helpful. It goes through like the physical way your body responds to grief and like the emotional way and how people are going to talk to you and how you can talk to people and how you don't have to talk to people. And how, like this chapter, this little section is called Not All Grief is the Same, but All Grief is Valid. Like it's not, it's very much the sentiment of that, like, we don't compare trauma vibe. Like we, everyone's trauma is different and everyone's trauma is valid and it's not, less than because it's, and that's been kind of the thing that I have to keep telling myself and that this book is really good at reminding me of is that like my grief and my trauma through this experience looks very different than almost anyone. And I think that's true of a lot of people. Like you, no one else is going to have the relationship that you had with the person that you lost, even if it's a like, you know, if you lost your mom, like not everyone who's lost their mom is going to have the same experience. And so a lot of, first of all, there are not a lot of books on grief that are even halfway decent. And a lot of them are very sort of categorical as like, this is how you should, like, this is the only way to experience it, sort of. And I haven't finished reading it, so I don't have like a full recommendation for it. But the other book that I have that I have found to be helpful is called Grief is Love, Living with Loss by Marissa Renee Lee. And it is a more recent title. And it's kind of a memoir vibe. I hate that. I hate that word vibe. I've been using it a lot more lately and I don't know why. It's fine. I used it at book club last week and I was like, this is a very serious poetry book we're talking about and I don't want to use this word. And somebody was like, this is a millennial book club. Like you're a millennial, it's fine. But it's weird. I'm side by tangent. But yeah, so welcome to the Grief Club. Is and I looked at the copyright. It's been a couple years, so it's not super, super new, but it's pretty recent. It is 2021, so it's fairly recent.
Yeah. I'm super excited to read this book because I have not read this book and grief. Is one of the subjects or topics that I am pretty passionate about. One of the things that I did want to say to you and to everyone who is listening, grief absolutely is recognized as a mental health, a valid reason to seek out mental health therapy. And even as recent as March of 2022, the American Psychiatric Association, along with WHO and the International Something Mental Health Board that I cannot think of right now, they did revisions to the DSM-5, which is like the criteria manual for diagnosing mental health disorders, to add a grief-specific disorder. It's prolonged grief disorder. So if you have persistent prolonged grief for more than 6 months, I believe, that is an official diagnosis that your therapist or psychiatrist could diagnose you with. Previously, it was just like a Z code. So it would usually be like, this person is depressed. They're depressed because of grief.
Because, so that's really cool. Now, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it is a recognized, I hate using the word disorder, but a recognized disorder.
Yeah, that's really cool to know because it is like, I don't know, like I remember when my grandparents died, my grandparents passing were the first like significant death that I had experienced. They sort of helped raise me. So it was, I was a lot closer with them than maybe some people are with their grandparents. And so I, my grandfather died at the end of 2020. And then my grandmother died at the beginning of 2021. And I remember like, oh no, I remember what it was now. I had two of my grandfathers actually passed away. One of them I was really close with. The other one, I was not as close with, but my siblings were really close with. They were younger and had spent a lot of their childhood with that grandfather the way I had spent mine with my other grandfather. And so they, I had basically two people I loved a lot and like were, was dealing with massive grief over pass away or have services around the same time within the same calendar year. And so I, with the first one, the first passing, I was told I had 3 days of bereavement leave. And so I took them. And I, like, when I went to, I had to travel out of state for the second one. And I, my siblings are 9 and 12 years younger than me. And I, like, they had to fly up at separate times, or at least one of them did. And I didn't want them to navigate, like, have to navigate all that on their own. And so, like, I, like, very specifically was like, there's no way I'm not going to this. And I, like, asked about it, and it was like, no, you get 3 days of bereavement leave per calendar year. Like, it is not like, if you use it, it's gone. Like, it's not like, oh, per person or per like experience. It's very odd. And that may not be the case everywhere, but, I just was, I remember being really surprised about that. And I was like, how does that, I don't know. It's just, our society doesn't function well for any sort of mental health stuff. But yeah, especially for grief, which is a common, like, people lose people all the time. Like, accidents happen, old age happens. Like, it is so, like, I would say probably even more than almost any other, like not everybody's going to experience depression or like clinical anxiety, but like everybody's going to experience grief. And so yeah, it's just wild that our culture doesn't recognize it. Really?
Absolutely. When I talk to a new client that is coming to me for like grief counseling, I start with grief is quite literally the most universal emotion and experience we as humans will ever experience outside of our birth and our death.
Yeah.
Because birth and death are pretty much the only guarantees in our life. So that yeah, means that the people around us are going to experience grief.
Yeah.
So yeah, America, society, do better.
Yeah. So much so. There's so much I could say about that one, but yeah, so I think both of those books, but especially the Grief Club one, is a great one. If you want to understand it more, if you have someone who's lost somebody or is in the process of losing somebody, if it was anything like mine, it was a sort of month-long goodbye process. And it's a whole other, like, I think it rewires your brain in a way you weren't expecting. And especially for me, like, I don't know, like, at our age, we don't, like, most people don't experience significant grief at our age, because our parents aren't really old enough to be, you know, like, if it's happening, and it does happen, if it's happened, it's a really bad, like, it's a horrible accident, or it's very sudden, you know, like, it's not typical. It's not like old age. Thank you so much for coming on. I think this was an incredible conversation, and I'm really excited about it. So
yeah,
it was nice to chat with you again too.
Absolutely. It's been forever. But also I think like my final plug would obviously be for the National Suicide Hotline, which is now 988.
Yes.
So you can just text that number and you will be connected with someone who will talk to you if you are feeling down and like maybe you don't want to be here anymore. So I think that's a super important one. And the other thing, my last plug, is for if you're looking for therapy, specifically if you identify as a Black or Brown person, always go to therapyforblackgirls.com. Or therapyforblackmen.com. And those will, they are, you can put in your location, your insurance, and what you're looking for. And if there is a therapist of color in your area, they will pop up and you can start therapy. So those
that's
are my,
awesome
my plugs.
Yeah. I'll be sure to, obviously we'll leave that in, but I'll be sure to put those somewhere in notes or something. That's a great resource. I didn't know about that website. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today. Hopefully you can come back another time, but.
Absolutely.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it and you've got an extra moment, I'd love if you would rate and review us on Apple Podcast. If you'd like to keep up with us outside of the weekly episodes, find us on Instagram at talesfromabibliophile. You can also shoot us any feedback, any comments or stories or anything at all that you'd like to share at talesfromabibliophile@gmail.com. Happy reading!